Good morning. Well, I'm glad to see some of you made it here today. All this snowing weather we have. Well, today I think I want to talk about some of the maybe puzzling things that might occur in our encounters with this teaching of the Buddha way, the Buddha Dharma. And perhaps you might have known, noticed this from time to time. Some things might not seem to make sense, or they might seem contradictory or something of this sort. But one thing I should say, I think, is any time we encounter a learning system of some sort, I think we should realize right up front that we're going to encounter things that will seem new to us or different or startling, things that we never thought about before or at first might seem strange. I think this is only quite natural, and I think we should be open to that. But especially so when it comes to a spiritual practice and teaching, we should expect this. However, I think that there more than ever, we probably resist being open to what is being taught, what is being shown, demonstrated. So it is right at the very place where maybe more than ever we should open up. I think we tend to shut down, retreat back into our conceptual habits and, you know, our habits of thought and behavior. And this might manifest as kind of a resistance then in our mind. And so then when we do encounter something that might be a little strange, a little contradictory, now we're quick to either gloss it over or look away or cover it up or pass it by. We're probably more quick to do that rather than to really take it up and to grapple with it and to look at it seriously. But in a spiritual practice and discipline and teaching, this is what we need to do. This is what we need to do, because this teaching, this practice is about transformation, a complete transformation of heart and mind. So we should be on guard against that. But I thought perhaps I can talk a little bit about some of the kinds of inconsistencies, apparent inconsistencies or contradictions we might encounter in this teaching. I want to talk about something specifically, but maybe just kind of moving in on it. Like right now, for example, in our Diamond Sutra class, at the heart of the Diamond Sutra, we have this logical scheme that doesn't seem logical at all. A is not A, therefore A. You know, so we encounter something like this. It seems very strange. I remember when I first encountered that, I think I almost became angry. You know, it was so stupid. You know, who would embrace anything as ridiculous as this? I mean, A is A. You know, how can you have A? A is not A, therefore it is A. That doesn't make, you know. But of course, as we look at this, as we approach these kinds of teachings, though, I think we need to slow down. Fortunately, I think in the case of when I first encountered the Diamond Sutra, I suppose it was that I realized that there was some depth to this teaching. Something, because the inconsistency, the illogic structure of it was so blatant, so obvious that there had to be more to it than meets the eye. And I would say that this is basically true throughout Buddhist teachings. It doesn't mean that we can't misunderstand these teachings or get the wrong idea or even learn whole systems that are off the mark and pass this along and make traditions out of it, because this certainly has been done as well. But when we encounter a teaching that is pointing directly to reality, we are bound to run into something that's going to strike us as being odd, strange, inconsistent, illogical, whatever. This is because we're used to relying on what it is that we have packaged in our minds, have conceptualized, have told stories about and made sense of. Well, I want to give you an example of what I've been thinking about recently. And we have, for example, these two teachings. One comes from the Buddha, one from Shi Tou, great Chinese Zen master. The Buddha said, we all know this, be a light unto yourself. Betake yourself to no external refuge. Hold fast to the truth. Look not for refuge to anyone besides yourselves. So be a light unto yourself. And then Shi Tou, at the end of the Sandokai, the Merging of Difference and Unity, he said, don't make up standards on your own. So I think I've had people actually wonder about this. It seems like we have a clear contradiction here. On the one hand, we're told, be a light unto yourself. And we're also being told, don't make up your own don't make up your own standards. Well, is that inconsistent now? When we approach these teachings, we'll run into things like this. But I would say that this apparent inconsistency, which really seems, I bet you right now maybe, if you hadn't thought about this before, this is going to seem indelible. These are inconsistent. You're not going to pull them together. But actually, I think I can show, I hope I can show this morning, how these two teachings are actually complementary. They completely come together and form a basis of very profound understanding. And without an appreciation of that, you know, I think it's very easy for us to, well, not only to not understand these teachings as they are voiced independently, but also to be very confused about what this practice and teaching is all about. Well, let's take a look at these. The Buddha said, be a light unto yourself. What was he talking about? Shi Tou, don't make up your own standards. Be a light unto yourself. Well, if we think that this means that you have the way, you have the right idea, you have the knowledge, something on that sort, don't rely on anything but yourself for the truth. You got it now. You know, of course, this is all in there. But if we're interpreting all of this from the standpoint of our ego, then we're missing it entirely. This is the first thing that, well, it's not the first thing, but the last thing the Buddha said, but it's about the first thing we have to encounter here in regards to this, these two teachings coming together is, first of all, I think it's the first thing you need to consider when you step on the spiritual path. You are the final authority. You're in charge here in terms of your awakening, your practice, your understanding, how you conduct your life, etc. This is you. This is up to you. I can't do it for you. I can't take this authority. The Buddha can't. No one can. This is your business. And we need to realize that. We need to own up to that. This means to stop looking to something out there that's going to bolster you, that's going to sustain you in some way. Something that if you could get it into your hands, you know, this teaching, this practice, this whatever, would be correct, right, better than these other kinds of things that other people go after. If we have this understanding, then we're not understanding what the Buddha just said here. Be a light unto yourself. This means, first of all, that you have to take responsibility for your understanding, your practice. You're walking this spiritual path, living your life. This is be a light unto yourself. It's very important to realize that this is something we can't give away. It is something you can't give up. We often pretend that we can, You know, we'll turn it over to some teacher, to some teaching. You know, we have our David Koresh's in the world. You remember him? And your Jim Jones's, isn't that the... Well, you know, well, there's people like this. We all know. Who would set themselves up as some kind of authority, expecting people to turn themselves over to this. It's not necessarily a person, maybe to this book, to this teaching, whatever. And people do, or at least they go through the motions of doing it, and they probably believe it, that they've done this and that they can do this. And oh yes, this one out there has that authority. But you see, this is what we should never forget. You have to say that. Because if you don't say it, if you don't think that, if you don't believe it, well, then you haven't really done that. But the fact is, in your saying so, in your saying that this other person, this teaching, this whatever, this book is the final word, the final authority, you're the authority who deems it so. So in other words, just realize, and this is what the Buddha was drawing our attention to when he said, be a light unto yourself. Realize that this is the only light, in a sense, that you have. It is the one that you have now. And also don't forget, though it might not be clear to you right away, but that in this teaching, that you are already enlightened, in a sense. In other words, you are not removed from the truth. You're not separate from it. It is with you now, always has been. You don't get it from another of any kind. This is what the Buddha is drawing our attention to. Be a light unto yourself. Don't look to something external to supply you with it. But now, that's one teaching. And if we don't understand it, as I've already suggested here, alluded to, we can become very egoistical about this. Take it by the wrong handle, so to speak. And think that somehow, okay, yeah, all right, well then I'm the last word here. This is where Shito steps into the picture now. And he says, don't make up standards on your own. This is very important to understand. What he's talking about is that this isn't about, you know, be a light unto yourself. Isn't about you. Isn't about your idea. Isn't about your belief. Isn't about your immediate concerns, your own personal selfish concerns. This awakening that we talk about, it isn't yours. It isn't something you can achieve. It isn't something you can get. It doesn't move around like that. It is already here. It's impossible to step out of it. And this is true for all of us. This is the situation that we're in. But if you begin to move, act, speak, carry on in this situation with the idea that somehow you're the last word, the final authority, and that somehow this means that you can dictate how things are, how they should be. It means that, well, for one thing, it means that you're not really looking at your own personal mind. That your actions now, your speech, your thought is all coming out of your concerns for self, the small self, which is seen separate and apart from everything else. It isn't a part of this whole fabric in which... which is enlightenment, awakening, truth, reality, in which we're all here together at once. So in these ways then, these two teachings complement each other. Because if we just say, you know, don't make up standards on your own, it might mean that we're going to have these standards foisted upon you by others. No, there's no standards like that. We don't teach standards, rules, regulations. We have a few minor ones like, you know, how to enter the room, etc. But about how to think, what to believe, etc. We don't have this. That's bondage. That's not freedom. And yet at the same time, we don't... on one hand, we don't turn it over to another. At the same time, we don't relinquish the fact that we are right here. That we have to take responsibility for this. That awakening isn't going to come through someone else's efforts. It's going to come through your own. So these two teachings then are actually complementary rather than contradictory, if we look at that very carefully. And what they do, where they seem to, it's like kind of like having, maybe we have half a floor here with one of them, and then we have the other half of the floor here with the other. And all gives us a place where we can walk. But this place where we walk with this teaching, with this understanding that is behind this teaching, is called the middle way. It's also called walking the razor's edge. Sometimes, you know, we talk about that teaching, you know, walking, we have to walk in the middle way. This is to walk the razor's edge. Ain't no deviations, a hair's breadth of deviation. Heaven and earth set apart, you know, and mountains and rivers blocked away, all of that. We can't step off it, not one iota, not one bit, not one atom off. You know, so this is the razor's edge. We walk that. Well, it sounds kind of painful. You ever can imagine walking on the edge of a razor? Not only painful, but impossible. Particularly if that razor is way up high somewhere, you know. Well, I would suggest that this razor, because of these two teachings, we can take that razor and bring it down right to the level of the floor. So we're walking on a nice, comfortable floor. But it is a straight line. There's no deviation from this. Or we step off this path. And it's called the middle way. I've given this example before too. Some of you have heard probably all these different little pieces I'm putting together today, but here's another one. I know it must be new to some of you, but this matter about this middle way being so narrow, like a razor's edge. Remember one time with my teacher, he was speaking out, I don't know, I think it might have been at Carleton College, I can't remember where it was, but somewhere. I was with him for this, and he was up at the chalkboard, and he's wild with a piece of chalk at a chalkboard, but somebody, he was talking about the middle way, and somebody said, well, isn't that kind of narrow? Isn't that narrow? You know, it's like walking this razor's edge. Isn't that kind of narrow? And he took this piece of chalk and he held it up. He said, how are you going to find the middle? How are you going to find the middle? You find the middle by looking at the whole. You know, both extremes are considered. And now with this, we find this middle path. So in other words, it's even though we walk this razor's edge, we walk this very narrow line. There's no deviation from this. Because it's the truth, this reality is just like this. There isn't any substitute for it. But the path that we are walking here is actually really quite comfortable. You can put your foot on it without slicing the feet. Because it involves the entire floor. It brings in both of these aspects. Both of these teachings are there. They are not contradictory. They come together. They complement. They give us full ground upon which to stand and to walk. I think if we were to deviate to either one, either side here, we will misunderstand. Be a light unto yourself. I'm not understanding the Buddha taught egolessness. We'll misunderstand that. Don't make up standards on your own. You know, just take it. You know, just say yes, sir. Take orders. No, it doesn't mean that. So we need both of these together. And then with this, I think we can find this middle way. And these two ways that were outlined here, they really do extend to the full extent. And out of this, we can see this middle path, this middle ground. Even though there's no deviation, no variance, or it's as narrow as a razor's edge, we don't cut our feet. We can step off. We don't fall through the floor. And we will step off. Obviously, with every foot. I mean, with every step, our foot is already draping over both sides of the... And that's all right. But sometimes we get the idea through these teachings that somehow we have to be, you know, we can't, you know, we can't even be human. We have to be absolutely perfect. Well, of course, you have to be perfect. But don't worry, you actually already are perfect enough. How much more perfection do you want? But in this world we live in, is it perfect? If we see it properly, it doesn't mean there aren't problems here. It's muddy water, difficulties here. We get confused. We think we have to run off, straighten everything out. No, what we need to do is to come back, realize the full range and extent of everything here, have a wholesome mind, wholesome practice that is taking in all of this, and out of this we can find that way to walk. And then we can walk it without pain, without difficulty. We stumble off. Immediately we can catch ourselves. We just come back. Our practice of meditation is just the same as this. We sit, meditation. Are we always on the beam? No. I don't know anybody who is, and I've known some remarkable people. Nobody can stay on that beam continuously. But when you wake up momentarily, you see you're off, just come back. Just come back. Come back without comment, without judgment, without any other concern. Just to come back, to walk this razor's edge, to be a light unto yourself, and to not make up your own standards. It is all right there. Well, do you have any questions or arguments or comments about this? If you got any other contradictory teachings too, maybe bring them here. We should probably do this from time to time. Yeah, David.
I may have missed it. You may have said that if don't make a standard of your own, your thoughts about sitting there, your soul, what is it about?
What is it? It has nothing to do with doing what you're told or not doing what you're told. That's secondary. It has to do with observing your own mind. I've said this before, and I mean it, though it gets lost. But this practice, this teaching, is always about that. It is about watching your own mind. And everything that we teach, in terms of practice, in terms of the teachings themselves, are always pointing one way or another to this. Because this is where we constantly get off. You know, but this is about coming back, noticing what is going on here. And then, as I mentioned, you know, then this is to walk this middle way. It is to not make up your own standards. It is you know, not to get caught up in your own egoism. And at the same time, it is to find your own way, so to speak, to take it up, to be responsible, because we all are. We can't set this down. You cannot set this down or give it to another. So that's what that means. Now, does it mean then? See, there's no rule. That's another thing I've said. You know, I point out there's really no rule to life, to reality. You know, so like, you know, do it this way. So should you follow orders then, or should you not? Well, how can I say? You look like, say, if you're in the military. We have this real conundrum there. It's really difficult. Soldiers following orders. Well, what if you're doing something that is criminal? Of course, we can argue that maybe war itself is criminal. But where do we draw this line, you see? Well, this whole matter about giving up this authority, if you're clear on this, you'll know exactly where to go with this. You will never get yourself bogged down in a quagmire on this issue. But at the same time, is it about just defying any authority that comes along? No. No, but each time, case by case, look at it. Is there a time for civil disobedience? Yeah, and we live under a constitution that has the wisdom to recognize that. Though most of us that live under this constitution don't have that much wisdom. But we're lucky enough to live in a place that ostensibly at least allows that. Of course, you play the concert, you might go to court, etc., you know, if you practice civil disobedience, but you don't do it, you know, willy-nilly, or just to defy authority. And of course, then if you are going to do it, how are you going to do that? How are you going to carry that out? Like Gandhi? Or like, a house-burning anarchist? Well, again, it's always, you know, a matter of, you know, you have this authority to recognize you're never without. You're always responsible for your actions, you know. At the same time, you're inseparable from the truth is right here. It's a matter of saying, this is, be a light unto yourself. You can see this, and you have to do this for yourself. So, follow orders, not follow orders. No rule for that. But if you're awake, if your concern is to be awake, to be in this moment, this won't give you a problem. And I would say most rules and regulations and laws and things are probably just, fair. So why not just follow them, even though you don't want to. Maybe you don't want to pay your taxes, fine. But why don't you go ahead? Of course, it's not for me to tell you to do that, because maybe you have a darn good reason not to. I don't know. But again, no rule. And I wouldn't tell you, do this or don't do that. That's another thing, like my role. People come to me sometimes, you know, for advice. I tell you, I'm not an advisor. I don't give advice as such. I don't tell you what to do. I'm not a counselor, you know. But I'll help you find your own mind. You know, this is what I can help you with a little bit. So you can, because in the end, you have to take care of it. You know, I can't tell you what to do. And it's amazing sometimes what people want me to tell them. You know, should you give up smoking? Well, sure, yeah, you should give up smoking. But, you know, people ask me things like this. Yeah, so, but it's for each one of us to, you know, you realize where your authority is. But of course, sometimes, you know, smoking, I use that as an example, and it's true, I have had this question put to me, and even perhaps weaker ones than that, if I can put it that way. But of course, then we get into these areas where it's, I don't know what to do. You know, one of the things, you know, in walking this way, we get clearer and clearer on what it is that we don't know. And there's an awful lot of that, you know. Yeah, I used to hear Katagiri, you know, my teacher, he'd say it oftentimes. I hear him muttering it under his breath. I don't know what to do. But he was very clear on that, you know. And most of us, we're not clear on that at all. We just go barging ahead thinking we know everything, you know. And then we get into some intent, and then we can't figure out how we got there, how do we get out of this mess, you know. Well, this is all about, learning, you know, to see that. To see how we entangle ourselves, how we get confused. But it's not about following orders necessarily, nor is it about defying orders. So in the end, case by case, you know, you have to follow that. But basically, I think, you know, stop at red lights, etc. Which reminds me of this Glenn Gould. One time he was asked, he was a pianist, and he was known for being, he would just practically get into a trance when he'd play. He's known for playing Bach, especially, and you watch him play, and he's in another world, really. But it's just incredible. It's absolutely precise, like a machine, however, with deep feeling. You know, it's absolutely incredible playing. Well, somebody once asked him, have you ever gone through a red light? And he said, yes. He said, but on the other hand, I've stopped at a few green ones. You know? But this is life, you know, and sometimes we inadvertently might, break the law or whatever. But, you know, the thing is, see, we can be very loose with this. We don't need to get ourselves bogged down or confused, you know, by any of this. You know, we're so good at that because we keep, well, what do you think? Well, what about this? And what about, you know? And we get ourselves entangled. But just stand back and look at this. Look at, you know, what I've tried to point out this morning here. Don't take hold of it too tightly in any, you know, area. Now, Scott, you had something.
we began this talk actually with what I think is one of the juiciest contradictions, or seeming contradictions. Zen said that, and we've said many times, and so have lots of other teachers, that this practice is totally about transforming heart and mind. Mm-hmm. And of course, we also hear that we can come into this and say, I'm going to transform my heart and mind.
Yeah, right, yeah.
That's the old tile into a mirror, person to a Buddha. And on top of that, we have learned that the contradiction that, everything's changing. Everything's already constantly transforming. Mm-hmm. Layered on top of that is what could possibly be transformed. So,
yeah, right.
Say a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't think I said, I'll have to go back and listen to the tape, I guess, but I don't think I said this is about you transforming heart and mind. This is about, this practice is about the transformation of heart and mind, I think is what I said. If that isn't what I said, this is that's what I'm saying now. That's what I said. But this is about the transformation of heart and mind. But now that includes you. Everything is transforming all the time. But again, it does relate to this teaching, because this isn't about you now, with your intention, your deliberate action, that you're going to transform it. How? Do you know how? By what rules? And to what's the ideal here? We're talking about reality and enlightenment and awakening and truth, you can't have any idea of that. So whatever ideas you are operating out of are going to be fallacious. And they're going to just keep you in the same predicament that you're in now, mainly not understanding what's going on. Will you transform through all of this? Yeah, sure. Everything, there's nothing but this transformation is continuing on. But this is about transformation in such a way that we finally realize how it is that we're already transforming. But the point I was making there is that we want to control this. We want to lock on. We want to freeze it too. Like, I don't want to take on anything new. I don't want to change my ways, etc. Well, you don't worry, but nobody's going to force you to do that. That's another thing I've pointed out at other times, where in terms of effort and, you know, right effort, etc. If we understand this teaching properly, you should never feel imposed upon, pushed, forced into doing something you don't want to do. You might feel that. You might feel a little bit of resistance there. But this is about not doggedly just going around and through it anyway. Maybe. You can do that. Whether you do it or don't do it, that's almost irrelevant. The point is that when you meet that resistance in your mind, notice it. Look at that. That's what this practice is about. So it's not about forcing you to... it's like in the case of smoking. Should I smoke or not smoke? Well... what's to say? No, you can't be a Zen student if you smoke. No, you have to... no. You know, and you can't be enlightened if you smoke, you know. And, you know, there's no rule. And but look at smoking. We all know about it, don't we? It's not so healthy, yeah, sure. Now, Carol.
I love that image of the tooth. I'm wondering if I'm interpreting it correctly, and that is that part of being awake is seeing for you in that moment.
Well, not seeing for you.
Or seeing where. Well, you know, it's interesting to see. I mean, we were talking a little bit last night about the exploration of humans. And. I was listening to the radio on situations in Bali, and I'm thinking that person's desperate situation, I know nothing about.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of level of reality. So at that moment, you know, the edges are really, there is no edge, really.
Mm-hmm.
But then for me, finding a way to live, that is seeing those two places. The other
thing. Yeah, the extremes, yeah.
Is that
well, our problem is that we tend to run to one of the extremes or the other. And of course, in times of extreme emotion, like, say, if you were suddenly there in Zimbabwe and all of this sort of thing is happening, it's easy to get caught up in that. You're surrounded by it. Other people around you are totally caught. And it's hard to keep a mind of the whole at that point.
we're easily driven to the edge, to one extreme point or another. Yeah, well, this is how it is, right? And, you know, but you see, we're not in that situation all the time. Most of us right now, I mean, we all have our own personal lives and dramas unfolding here. But most of us are generally, we're not out on those extreme edges, you know, or pushed to it most of the time. And these are our moments when maybe we can find this mind of awakening, find this mind of... sometimes too, though, when you're driven to that edge, you know, that also can shock us into waking up too. You know, so again, there's no rule here, no pat answer. But the point is, no matter where we are, what our circumstances are, to the extent that we can collect our mind, to the extent that we can bring ourselves back to this moment, to be here, and to be here in the whole context, not trying to drive that out and bring this in, you know, that kind of a divisive mind, to the extent that we can have this wholesome mind, you know, that's what we're dealing with here. And of course, it's with this kind of mind that maybe we can, you know, help people out of their confusion. It's coming out of confusion ourselves, you know. Again, that's what this practice is about. Learning to do that. And acquainting ourselves with the profound subtleties of, you know, how we get confused. And how we even trick ourselves into thinking, well, I've got to, you know, I'm not confused. You know, all of this. It's just, you know, the depths of this are incredible. But again, this is about, you know, and we walk that, and you get knocked off the line there. And we just get back on. At first, we're knocked way off. We drift away for a long time. But gradually, we can learn to more or less stay on that line, so to speak. And remember, that line is including the whole world. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I don't know. Did I answer your question, Carol?
Yeah, I don't know if it's answered, but it's just about, I mean, you know, it's just about
you see the extremes, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you see both extremes and you're not embracing either one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're realizing that both of them are necessary. Because necessary in the sense that it has to be, they'll never go away, it's always like this. No, they're necessary in the sense that this moment, they're here. Yeah, so, you know, it's not like somehow we can get rid of some aspect of this. We can't. So it's in this moment, and then in this moment we embrace the whole. We find a mind that is like that. How do we recognize it? It's kind of related to David's question, really, but it's by watching your own mind. The order comes down, just watch your own mind. Look at that order. Look at it in the context of the whole. But again, no rule. That's another thing that people find difficult about this teaching and this practice, because we want rules. It would be so nice. We just lay it out for me. Would you just, you know, and I can either accept it or reject it. But Buddhism is just frustrating for people because we don't do that. But there's a reason. It's because the world itself is dynamic. It's alive. It's flux. It's change, you know. The rule is something rigid and frozen and doesn't match reality. So it's you know, like for those of us studying the precepts now, you know, these aren't rules. And of course, we want rules. You want to embrace the rules. But the moment you do that, no, you can't find a moral basis there now. You know, if it is rules, where's your moral authority? You know, you're supposed to obey these rules. And so it just simply doesn't work that way. We have to do something. We have to go back to the very heart and source of reality. And realize our own mind now. And that's where we'll find some basis for how to live, how to, you know, in a just, fair, awakened way, one that matches reality. Anything else? Yes, Matt. Yeah. So, I put that in because I don't mean to say that we should be without rules. You know, yeah, we need rules. You know, But another thing too, that what we're talking about here is in a society, in a community of people, you know, we need rules. And in a small community here, we have a few rules, mainly rules of how to enter the room, etc. You know, so we can keep a certain amount of decorum and, you know, quietness here that enhances the practice of the meditation. But, you know, so, I mean, that's where rules will kind of, you know, come into play. But what we're talking about here, you know, and here's this, be a light unto yourself once again. This is your business. And the basis of how to live a moral life, how to live a life of kindness and tranquility and patience and intelligence and sanity and a life of enlightenment. In the end, for each one of us, this is our business. You know, so these matters of how to conduct one's life, etc. Yeah, it goes on right here. It doesn't involve that thing on the outside, except at the same time, of course, if we lay it out in a way that I've tried to illustrate this morning, it does involve the whole world, but not in a backwards way of the rule and the regulation. Okay, it's coming out of your own understanding and realization of this moment. This is where we need to go. This is where we need to look. It isn't our job, our business, to go out there and clean up the world. That's what we have it backwards. You know, and now to impose, you know, you got to do. No. Take a look at how you are conducting your own life. Take a look at your own mind. At the same time, of course, we are in the world with others. We need some rules here. Yeah, and we have. And some of the rules will be unjust. You know, some will be foolish. Some will be very, very wise and very powerful and, and of course, very necessary. I mean, from the simple rules of, you know, stop at stoplights to, you know, more complex ones. Like how to deal with Enron and stuff like that. You know? Looks like we needed a few rules there that got kind of worse. But again, yeah, so we shouldn't confuse, you know, our responsibility, you know, for that, you know, that social structure that we need out there. It's quite a different thing. And we do confuse it. This is one of the reasons that we don't wake up, because we are confused on that. So something worth looking at there. Anything else? Yes, Melody.
How do you do that without getting caught up in I and me, when I see, I feel, what I'm thinking, mm-hmm. what's going on in my mind, me and I, mm-hmm.
without
getting caught up in that, and it's
still
kind of isolating somehow.
Yeah, well, it is.
When you constantly have to look at
right.
how your mind is going. Mm-hmm. So how do you not get caught up in that?
You know, first you can maybe start to look at, well, you know, what is this I anyway that you're referring to? And why do you have to drag it in? And what is it that you think you're dragging into this picture? Yeah, but see, that's not the same thing as saying I. Just realizing that it is right here. It is immediate. You know, we don't need to form an ego around this. That's something really quite abstract. Because, you know, well, what are you exactly? And this, be a light unto yourself, you see, so the Buddha wasn't referring to an ego. He wasn't referring to a separate self. What he's referring to is just this, you know, immediacy of the world and your mind, and you're right here, inseparable from the world. So we can call this, you know, this is really a look into the big self, not the separate self. And what I tell people, it's in the book, you know, Buddhism Plain and Simple, where I talk about leaning of mind. This is what we can watch. You can start to notice how this mind is leaning toward this, away from that. This is where we can be kind of sensitive to that. And to the extent that this is happening, sensitize yourself to that and realize that that is happening. You start to notice now, to the extent that that is going on, there's pain, there's suffering, there's confusion tied up in it. To the extent that, you know, you forget yourself. I know that you play piano, or at least you used to play piano, hasn't there been a, do you ever remember a moment where you're playing and you just forget yourself and you're completely immersed in the music? Yeah, and there you are. And it is possible to, little by little, to live more and more in that kind of a moment where you're gone, you're forgotten. You'll really be there with whatever it is, whether it's playing the piano or something else. There's a kind of a quiet, profound, can I say, happiness that is there. A lack of anxiety, you know, because... but anyway, that's what, you know, and how do you find that mind? Well, I don't know, just start to, you know, yeah. Another way of looking at it is that, you know, just merge with the object. Like in the case of the, you playing the piano, merge with that. Stop being you playing the piano and just, there's no separation. You know, it's just one thing happening here. You know, I use the example of my mother in Lefse in that other book, in case you have a copy of that. I don't know if I have Lefse in the index or not, but it's in there somewhere. But same kind of thing there, you know. And but how do you find that? Well, to always think in terms of, well, what effect does this have on me? You know, what am I getting out of this? Watch yourself stepping into that trap. And we do that because of our interest in being happier and, you know, more at peace in it. But it takes us in the absolute opposite direction. You know, and once you start to notice this, you won't keep going in that direction. You start going the other way. Little by little, you acquire other ways of, you know, behaving, and you know, that'll take you in another direction. But again, it's, it, you know, what specifically to do? It's hard, you know, nothing specific to say, but it is a matter of noticing your own mind. You know, then you start to see what's confusion and what isn't, what takes us out of that. Well, it's probably getting late, huh? So maybe. Anybody else have a real burning question? I don't want to cut you off, but... Okay. Well, thank you very much.